Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because you don't blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. And I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money from the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about something like about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
Thank you.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, "Shoot it!" So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarion Styles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarion can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This, God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you're having is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box going to get sent back to sender. And now you're going to have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Because I used to observe that a lot of those shacks used to be by the track where black people were.
With the room in the back.
Yes, with the room in the back. That was a safety net.
Yeah.
Where black people who would move here and there and go from here and there looking for jobs, that's usually why we move. And the jobs would play out like they always did.
And do.
But we had a place to go when the sun went down. But now, those shacks by the track don't exist anymore. They came and built highways right alongside of those railroad tracks where those shacks used to be. Super highways. So now, if you get on a highway, you might notice that if you... Sometimes you are right alongside of a railroad track. You see trains passing
that
as you are driving.
That is true.
Down a superhighway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, those highways used not to be there in the northwestern hemisphere. It used to be shacks along there. A lot of those shacks were on what we call railroad property. But the railroad people, the people that ran the railroads, didn't care much because nobody wanted to be down. That wasn't prime real estate.
No.
Nobody wanted to be by the tracks anyway. So black people used to build those shacks around there back when black people knew how to build shacks. Black people don't know how to build anything now because they used to build places for white people, but they cut them off with things called unions, took them out, took the carpentry all out of the schools and all like that. So how many black people do you know how to fix anything now? It used to be thousands and millions of black people that know how to build a house from scratch out of old pieces of lumber.
Wow.
A lot of people don't remember that. Most people are not that old to have seen it done. Coming along, I'm old enough to remember when many black people used to get together on a Saturday afternoon. That was the only time they had off, or sometimes on a Sunday sometimes after church. They would get together, six or eight of them, and go down and build what they call a shotgun house. It wasn't much, but it was a roof over your head, a good solid roof. I've been in some of those houses, raised up in some, all right? They were excellent, solid houses that could stand a lot of storm and rain. They weren't much, just maybe three rooms. But I've been in some of them, and there were many, 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 many of them. But along came the white supremacists and say, these Negroes know how to build stuff. We're going to fix that so the next generation won't know how to do anything except stand in front of a place that is built and beg, because they won't know anything about carpentry or masonry or how to make anything with their.
And now, an exclusive first look at the upcoming documentary, 7 a.m.
Because true economic science is a branch of military science. War and money go hand in hand. Most wars are fights so people can make more money and war is money. That means what? That the European American is not about to prepare black children to compete with his children for control of the economic sector. It's not going to happen. So if black people want this science, we got to teach it, we got to study it, and we're going to have to make some mistakes in perfecting it because we're still babies in the water of global economic commerce. As African people, we are financially illiterate. So we should not be surprised that we're so economically backward because we were never taught how to be economically forward. Our education in America has not provided or prepared us to be able to compete with Europeans economically. The historically black college was designed to do what? Teach you how to work for white people. Public schools, charter schools, parochial schools, independent schools. What is the purpose of education in America for black children right now? To teach them how to make a living working for white people. But I don't want the kids coming to my school to be going to class thinking that I'm learning this so I can go and get paid by a white person. They're going to be empowered to start their own business. When they leave that school, they're going to go into business. And why do we need our people to be self-sufficient? Because when you're not self-sufficient, you can't speak your mind. One of the biggest reasons why black people have been so cowardly in the post-civil rights movement, not standing up for ourselves, standing up for our children, standing up against police brutality, we're scared to lose our jobs. We have to work. We got kids. I can't talk about the racism on my job. I might lose it. So the reason why we're not speaking our mind is because we don't have economic freedom. As Mr. Garvey said, Marcus Garvey said, that a solid racial program must be built on a solid economic foundation. Show me your economic condition, and I'll show you your political condition. The political economy of the black community rests on the premise that because they do not make their own money, they are enslaved to Europeans. And as a result of that, they will never be able to do what needs to be done to carve out a future for their children, because the hand that pays is also the hand that rules them.
Say some shit to y'all that I seen yesterday that made me smile, but it hurt me to my heart. There's a house next door to me that's been abandoned, and the yard, the grass high as hell and everything. And there's a couple of abandoned cars out there beside the house. Well, yesterday I get off work about 7 o'clock. A Mexican guy pulled up. He said, "These your cars?" I said, "No." He said, "I just bought this house, man." I said, "All right, that's what's up." He was like, "You know whose cars it is?" He said, "No." He said, "Well, I bought the house, not the cars." Okay, I'm like, cool. I'm thinking he's just coming to look at the house. I go back in the house, do a little straighten up. I swear to God, I walk back out the house. Now, I'm getting off about 7:20. It's fucking 9 Mexican trucks just pull up. They got fucking beer, lights, and shit, right? So I'm like, what y'all finna do? He said, "We finna fix this house." I said, "What kind of crew you got working after 7 o'clock? He said, "These my friends." The fucking house is fixed this morning. They went in there and drywalled that fucking house. Wow. I just left out of there. It was a fucking abandoned house. That bitch looked new this morning. Whew. It was an abandoned fucking house. And it looked new this morning. It's an old African proverb. Many hands make light work. I just don't think they're better than us. I just think we won't do nothing together. Wow. You're not hearing what the fuck I'm saying. It was an abandoned house yesterday at 7:15. That bitch is new this morning. He bought a tax lien house. I can't wait to see what they do. I can't wait to see, is one family going to live in there? Is they going to, I'm going to get to know the motherfuckers. You best believe me, when I make some money, I'm going to do it. I'm going to bring us together. And I'm not fucking with a lot of people.
People keep talking about how the world is going to come to an end. And I wonder, in these days and these times, if anybody likes to say, is anybody going to be ashamed? People keep talking about how society is falling down today. And as hard as I try not to listen just to what them folks got to say, but you know, I just can't help but look around and see we digging our own grave. And there's just one thing I want to know. Can anybody be saved?
How many things have I heard you say? All right, guys, welcome back. EYL, Hometown Heroes Edition, Chicago.
Chi-town, what's going on now?
Shout out to the Chi, shout out to the West Side, to the South Side, North Side, East Side, every side.
We was at it South right now.
Yeah, we in South Side right now, for sure.
Again,
for sure.
Again.
For sure. What area are we at specifically?
We in Washington Park.
Washington Park, shout out to Washington Park.
Those
sure.
In the know, y'all know.
Yeah. So we got a very special edition today. But before we start, we got some housekeeping items we want to make you guys aware of. It's not too late to register for our workshop, our first ever workshop on 10/17. So as we said before, every single month we're going to be having a workshop in person, but also live stream for anybody anywhere in the world. And there's going to be a different EYL guest is going to speak about their area of expertise. So the first one is with our guy, MG, the mortgage guy. And it's going
to
be about financing your first real estate deal, real estate financing for your first deal. So you go to our website, earnyourleisure.com, on the events tab, and you can register. As I said, you can do in person in New York City, but you can also live stream it and you can watch it. You don't have to actually watch it while it's going on with the live stream. Like once you have it, you can watch it whenever you, so if you're at work or whenever. So make sure you do that. So, yes. All right. So now we have a very special episode. I'm actually interested because this is something that I don't know anything about.
Zero.
I'm going to educate myself on this. So Byron and Shanice, dynamic couple that also are business partners as well. So congratulations, first and foremost.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So you guys, all right, you're in the mobile home industry, right? So for anybody that's not familiar with that, that is home on wheels pretty much, right? It's interesting because I met you at the event, our networking event, which was amazing, by the way.
Thanks for coming.
Yeah.
Thank y'all for having me.
And you was telling me about it, and, you know, I was thinking, like, this is just an interesting thing. Because we talk about real estate a lot, but we've never spoken or covered mobile homes. And you was actually educating me because a lot of people, especially where we're from in the Northeast, we have derogatory, which I learned was a derogatory
we
name.
We shall not say.
Yeah, which is, we used to call it a trailer home or in trailer park, but it's not called, it shouldn't be called trailer park or trailer home. It's a mobile home and a mobile park. Mm-hmm. But long story short, you can actually invest in these properties. And it's just like real estate. You can make money. You can wholesale. You can flip. You can fix up. And it's really interesting. It's a lot less as far as how much money you have to put into it.
Yeah.
It's a lot kind of easier, finance and all that kind of stuff. So, all right, before we even get into the details, can you tell your story of how you got into the industry?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Okay. So, basically, I've been trying to do real estate for 4 or 5 years, right? And when I tell you, like, capital, credit, I was having a lot of issues with that. And so, man, March 3rd of 2017, that was the day I was fired from work.
It's a great day.
Yeah, great day.
That's my birthday.
What kind of job did you have?
So I was in the transportation industry. I was a driver manager.
Okay.
And so, man, for that time, I'm like, man, how am I still getting real estate? So, man, I was in a life coaching program at that time to become a life coach.
Mm-hmm.
So I will say that helped me up to be where I'm at now. And that's something I hustled. Like, I'm just trying to get into it. And at the time, man, I was driving Lyft to pay the bills, and I was always listening to podcasts. And this particular day, I happened to find a podcast. It was on mobile homes. But mind you, I'm driving, and people are like, man, turn that off, man. I ain't trying to hit that. I'm like, come on, man. So I sent it to her. I sent it to Sharnice, like, hey, take a listen to this, man. I think this is going to be special. Send it to her, and then...
Yeah, so he sent me that podcast, and that podcast is on mobile homes. And I always tell Byron, the biggest thing that I learned from that podcast that so happens to be on mobile home investing, like he said, and the biggest thing that I learned from that podcast was you can literally get started with very minimal capital. Credit does not have to be good. And those are the two things that I feel like at the time, because me and Byron were new investors, those were the things that were kind of holding us back. So once I heard that, I was like, okay, we need to get into this niche of mobile homes. So I came home, I told Byron, like, look, we about to get into these mobile homes. Like, I know we trying to get these three flats right now here in Chicago. We were trying to get buildings at the time, but like I said, our capital, our credit was not so good. So I was like, look, let's try something different. Let's go outside the box and let's conquer this. And, man, it's been history ever since.
Oh, that's amazing. I mean, especially as a couple doing it.
Yeah.
Y'all supporting each other. We don't see it. Like, this is the first couple that we've seen on our podcast. What did it take to have a belief in each other? Did y'all always trust each other? Like, how did that develop?
Man, dope question. So the biggest thing for myself going through that journey, I learned a lot. I took a lot of L's, went broke, messed up my credit, car repo, like all the worst, right? And so she had my back. She was the one person that out of everything from family, friends that had my back. So it was like, yo, with this knowledge, like, I have nothing but trust, and I'm going to have so much patience in this. Mm-hmm. And she trusted me. And I was just see her growth, and she just dug and became a student, literally with no entrepreneur experience at all. And I'm just looking like, yo, she a rock star.
I got a keeper.
So, all right. So, okay. So you listened to the podcast. You sent it to her. What made you say, okay, this is something that we – because you both had lost your jobs, right?
Yes.
So what made you say, okay, this is something that we're going to do full-time? And what was your first – deal, like, what was the first thing that got you into, like, buying your first mobile home?
Man, so honestly, I had nothing else to lose. Like, I had took so many L's. I'm like, yo, this gotta work. One of these gonna work. So again,
common theme.
Right? So, you know, we got the scavenging, man. We took out a high interest loan for $10,000, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, and listen, the interest rate on that was 24%.
Wow.
Yeah. Was like, wow. Like credit card?
No, a loan. Yeah, I call them shark loans. Oh, okay. Like a payday loan.
Y'all went through like a credit union or something like that?
Lending club.
Okay. Yeah.
And so we got that, and then we just dove in. We started hitting the road. We had did a little education, but we didn't know. Like, we literally learned from the School of Hard Knocks.
Mm-hmm.
So we hit the road. We went all the way down to Cincinnati looking for homes. We didn't know. We were trying to see if we were going to move homes. And, man, our first deal, she actually found this guy and up in, it's called Love's Park.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I ended up, again, prospecting via Facebook. I found this guy. He was a park manager. He had a lot of older homes, and he was like, look, we got some homes under $5,000. You should come out and take a look. That was definitely our budget because starting out, we was like, we only want to stay under $5,000. So went out there. We looked at a few homes. We ended up getting two. One home, we paid $3,700. It was move-in ready, so we didn't have to do anything to it, no rehab. It was beautiful. And the second home, we purchased for $500. We put a little bit of rehab into it, about $3,200. We ended up flipping those first because, of course, we wanted to go ahead and make some profit so we can continue to invest. So we ended up flipping those. We made $19,500 in less than 30 days.
And then you said, this is something.
This
sounds good. Yeah, that's it, right. And that was it, right. That was it.
At that time, you were saying, like, that was already half of your yearly salary, right?
Yeah. So at that time, prior to me getting fired, I worked at the gas company here in Chicago. And my salary gross, I was making about, like, 39. So you're thinking about, I made about close to 20,000 in less than 30 days. That was, like, that was eye-opening for me.
Not by gas.
Yeah, right.
Now that's powerful because a lot of times people are afraid to leave their job. I posted something the other day, like, don't let a fear of losing $50,000 a year could stop you from making $50,000 a month. Mm-hmm. And you could break that down to anything, but like your situation is like, listen, you actually was blessed to get fired or lose your job, however you lost it, because it's like, let's say that you might have stayed in that job making $39,000, mm-hmm. and it's like a lot of times people are like scared to leave, mm-hmm. and you would have never even knew that you could possibly make $20,000 a month, and then 5 years from now you could be making $100,000 a month, like, you know what I mean? So it's crazy, but I like that you guys supported each other, mm-hmm. and took the leap of faith, because that's extremely important, especially in a relationship. It's like, mm-hmm. you know, you tell your partner you lost your job and it's like, you better get another one. What made you have faith in him and even like, okay, like, you know, I'm gonna support you on being an entrepreneur. You guys are entrepreneurs. Like, I'm gonna support you on being an entrepreneur. Like, with no business background, it's not like you guys were entrepreneurs before that. Like, what made you have faith? Because he said you were the only person that really had faith. So what made you have that faith?
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, prior to, you know, Byron's entrepreneurial journey, like, you know, we were already, I guess, quote unquote, talking and dating before we got serious. And at that time, like you said, he had a good job. You know what I'm saying? So once we got back linked up, at that point, he was going through his hardships or whatever. But by that time, we had already built our friendship. We was already best friends. So it's like, as a best friend, why would I turn my back on him? You know what I'm saying? Like, I was there for him through all the hard situations that he went through in his life. And then I feel like he was also there for me, because at the time I had just lost my job. I was very stressed out. He was there picking me off the floor, telling me every day, like, Char, come on, like, we about to do this together. Like, I'm thinking about us now, our legacy, generational wealth. Like, he was feeding that into me every single day. It's like I had no choice but to rock with it. Like, you don't get that every day, especially from a partner, from a relationship. Like, that's powerful.
Good man.
Yeah. She got me up here.
It's like a Lifetime movie.
Right. Yeah.
No, that's beautiful. I mean, I'm a married man, so like, I can relate to everything that you're saying. Like, having somebody that knows that whatever we're gonna, mm-hmm. whatever I do is for us, right? Yeah. So like, we are one. So like, mm-hmm. the decisions that I make or she makes, it's for the betterment of us and mm-hmm. our family, right? That legacy. Mm-hmm. So that's powerful. Shout out to y'all.
Appreciate it.
Black love, black love. So, all right. So I don't think people fully understand, like I said, especially like we come from New York. And but you actually told me that there's a lot of mobile homes in New York.
Yeah.
But like the New York City area, metropolitan area, and, you know, a lot of listeners that may be from like cities, they don't fully understand how big of an industry mobile parks homes are. Mm-hmm. So I did some research. So it's 22 million Americans live in mobile homes.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, how lucrative is it, like, on an ROI standpoint, how lucrative is the mobile home industry?
Man, well, listen, it's the highest cash-on-cash return of any real estate investing. Like, I didn't believe it at first until, I'm going to give you an example. Our average returns are 250% ROI on per deal that we do.
How long does it
Our normal turnaround is 60 days. Now we're to the point that we flip a house, we flip it in less than 15 days.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, all right. So, since you said that, can you break down a deal and, like, kind of explain, like, how does that work?
Cool. So, I'm going to break down with a deal. So, we had a deal. We purchased a home for $3,000, mm-hmm. right, in Indiana. And the home that it didn't need any work. From an older lady. In most of the situations, right, most people don't really know the value of their homes. Mm-hmm. And $3,000 said, cool. So what we did was we said, you know what, we're going to open up for seller finance. We're going to help somebody get affordable housing. In that area, the average rent, we normally base it off the average rent, it was $800, right? So we said, okay, we're going to be comparable. Now, in a park, if you're doing mobile home investing in a park, the park has lot rents, just like HOA fees, okay? So you have to pay monthly those. This park was at $372.
So, all right. A lot fee. What's a lot fee?
So it's like an HOA fee. They're paying for the trash. They're paying for the water.
Just to stay, on the actual.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
So the park owns the land.
The land.
Right.
Yep.
And
so
you own the actual.
You can't just park your mobile home anywhere.
No.
It has to be inside of a licensed, like a park that has a permit and it's mm-hmm. owned. It's like a. Okay.
Right. And so normally, like, the ones that you drive, like the RVs, those are different, right? You can go drive those and go into a park and pay like a fee. But normally the ones that you see are kind of just like on actual like land, like those right there,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can move those, but it's not costly. Mm-hmm. Normally about $2,000 or so to move them, depending on how many miles.
Okay.
But in this case, so we said, hey, you know what, we'll take $428 monthly, okay? So it was $800. So how it did, we put them on a 60-month term, because remember, it's a mobile home is pretty much a motor vehicle in most states. It is not actually real estate. It's real property, mm-hmm. unless you're putting on land. So this particular deal, we're getting $800 a month. We're getting cash flowing $428. We put them on a 60-month term. At the end of that 60-month term, that $3,000, we turned to $25,000. Mm-hmm. Was it $25,620?
Mm-hmm.
So that's 700% return on investment we created.
So the rent that you guys were collecting was $400 a month?
$428.
Yeah. And how much did you buy it for?
$3,000.
How? How do you buy something for $3,000 and charge? How much were they? They were paying $800 a month in rent?
Yes.
How is that possible?
So with that, so instead of them renting an apartment, right? Because if they rent an apartment for $800, they got no equity in it.
Mm-hmm.
So we're providing this equity in that house, right? The thing is, we buy it for so low, right? We don't necessarily have to say, okay, we're going to only sell it for $5,000, right? We still operate, because if you think about the number, it's still a house. It's still a home for them. So at the end of the day, a $25,000 house, where are you still going to get a move-in ready $25,000 house?
So, no, that's crazy. But I was just like, but if why would somebody not just buy it on their own? If they, like, why would you rent for $800 if it only costs $3,000 to buy?
Yeah. So the thing is, for us being investors, it's almost like we buy an off-market property, mm-hmm. right? The most people don't really know that, hey, I can go get that. And if they do, they definitely take advantage,
yeah.
right? For example, we have a house Sharnice just sold this week. We got the house for $1,500. We sold it to him for $6,000. He's going to move the home, right? We still doing a favor. But then at the same time, when we offer seller finance, we just offer – I usually do anywhere from like $18. I look at it, $18 to $25 per square foot.
So you could actually, with your financing, you could have no money and get a home?
Yes.
Yeah.
Interesting. So I can, right? So like I go in, I have no money. I'm like, yo, I want to get this home. That's where you come in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm offering, because see, the thing is, most banks don't lend to mobile homes. Like Warren Buffett, he has two lending companies, because he understands that Warren Buffett is in this game. He owns Clayton Homes.
Okay. Warren Buffett lends mobile homes?
Yeah.
Yes.
So he owns Clayton Homes. That was an acquisition he bought in 1997. Clayton Homes is the largest like manufacturer home company in the country.
So banks don't give the loans, because are they looking at it as an automobile loan? Like, how are they looking at it?
They're looking at it as a depreciating asset.
Yeah.
Whereas
okay.
for us, we look at it as value.
So it's a depreciating asset because it has wheels, and anything that with wheels depreciate,
mm-hmm.
correct?
Right. Yep.
Yep.
So is that true?
Not as.
Right.
At the end of the day, for us, we look at it, we solve an affordable housing crisis, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the biggest thing. Like, cities, we know what, the cost of living is going up,
mm-hmm.
all right? Wages are still staying the same. So people are getting pushed out. Like, we see it every day, like, where it's gentrification, people can't afford. So for us, it's like, hey, listen, I get it. You've been living in this apartment for the last 5 to 6 years. Why don't you get your own asset, right? Because at the end of this, you can do the same thing. Most people that we educate that buy houses from us, we even teach them, like, hey, this is how you sell your home mm-hmm. to get your money back or make more on your home.
So where are these mobile parks located? In proximity to major cities, right? So we live in the New York tri-state.
Mm-hmm.
How many miles typically would a mobile park be located, right?
Yeah, good mm-hmm. question. So for you guys, I know you guys got one in Staten Island.
Right.
Yeah,
I think I told
like
you that.
That.
Like, I've been in New York. We've been in New York our whole lives. Like, I don't think I've ever been to Staten Island.
Yeah.
Like, shout out to Wu-Tang.
Yeah.
Yeah,
shout
out to and then we got a few students out in New York, and they normally work with parks in Jersey.
Okay.
So they go over to Jersey.
Yeah. And about, honestly, I would say about 60 miles. Mm-hmm. If you're willing to go upstate New York, I'm not sure the exact mileage, but I know you guys have a lot central and upstate New York.
Is there like a mandated distance like that the like federal government will say, like, this is a residence you can go before you create a park?
So here's the thing. In modern days, so mobile home parks, the reason why you don't see a lot of them popping up right now,
mm-hmm.
because here's the reality, taxes, right? In America, it costs on average like $12,000 to send a kid to school.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give you guys an example. I'm about to blow your mind real quick. Our taxes on our mobile homes per year, $160. Our taxes on our mobile homes in Indiana, $37.
For the year?
For the year. So you got to think about it. If you have a kid living, if you got children, you got two children, and it costs at least $11,000, $10,000 to send them to school, that city is not eating from that. So cities really don't really like mobile home parks because of the taxes-wise. And most mobile home parks, they're using the city water. They're using the city sewer. So And, you know, in that case, it's like, yo, we're not eating off that. We don't really like this over here.
That's so I pay more in lunch money than that.
I always, all right. Here's a question. You live in a mobile home, right? How do you, what is plumbing? How does that work?
So everything is above ground. Everything is above ground. So the cool thing is, like, you know, if you need something fixed, they can go under the actual mobile home to repair.
So, but, like, your actual, like, you go to the bathroom, it goes underneath the, like, where does that go?
Is it like a septic tank down there?
Yeah, so normally most parks, so here's the thing, most parks either have, they're hooked up to city sewer, so they will have the hookup so it can go, you know, along with the city, or they have septic tanks.
Got it.
Okay. So, like, if it comes from your truck or your mobile home into, like, a underground thing.
Yeah.
So, all right. So if the taxes are so low, right, so what's the, all right. What's the gig? Because it has to.
Something's up, right?
Something's
got to be up.
Right? He's like, what's going on here?
So, all right. The taxes are low. You can buy a home for low. You can sell it for high. So what's in it for the city or for the town to actually house these places? And how come more people aren't doing it?
Good question. So, I would say the first question I'm going to answer, you said, like why do cities, so most mobile home parks are grandfathered in. A lot of them really popped up in the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s began because after the war, the government invested into mobile homes, right? Mm-hmm. After they were using actually old war planes and using the tin, that's why most mobile homes are kind of like that aluminum. They had a surplus of aluminum, so they like, yo, how can we use this? Boom, we built a house. So that's why mobile homes actually really start going. So in the 70s, once HUD got involved in the 70s, that kind of depreciated, right? The value of mobile homes, because at one point mobile homes were the place to be.
Like, yeah, you told me that. It's like it used to be luxury.
Yeah. And it was kind of like suburbia. Most mobile homes are in rural, like suburbia, right? Mm-hmm. If you go to a lot of mobile home parks, they look like little, I guess you can say, suburban neighborhoods. And when HUD got involved, unfortunately, thinking about the next generation, people start moving back to the city. It just kind of took the value down. So it was a need for affordable housing, but with cities, these places were definitely grandfathered in. There's a lot of cities that, for example, let's say an owner actually sells a mobile home park. Sometimes they're like, yo, that's inhabitable. They don't really want it because they don't really benefit from the mobile home park.
So when did mobile homes get the bad name of, like, trailer parks and trailer homes? Like, when did that shift? Because you said at first it was luxury, and then it obviously kind of got tarnished, and people have bad ideas when they think about that. So, like, at what point did that even, like you said, like trailer park trash, stuff like that, like, how did that happen?
So, to my knowledge, it was an article, I'm not sure the exact year, but I know it was like in the late 60s, and somebody had wrote a newspaper article about trailer trash, and that just kind of stuck. The name just kind of stuck. And then, of course, movies play out. You think about horror movies, right? Mm-hmm. 8 Mile.
Yeah.
Right?
I'm telling you, when y'all said mobile homes, the first thing I thought was Ozarks.
Yeah,
it must be similar to that.
Right, right.
And so the ones they show on television or they depict, honestly, it's almost like in the hood, right? They depict, like, you know, what they, for example, Chicago, they're going to depict on certain shows that is just the gutter, you know what I mean? Yeah. But at the same time, it's very nice mobile home. It's a luxury. People don't know it. In San Francisco, they have a mobile home park that literally $1 million mobile homes. The same double wide that I can go purchase for $15,000 is going for $1 million in an area in San Francisco.
Yeah, I saw Will Smith that had a mobile home. It was cost like $2 million. It was like a two-story mobile home.
Yeah,
like he travels like to movie sets with it.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's dope. All right, so now we got the backstory. So now in the second segment, we're going to go into some details and go over terms and key definitions. All right, so now we're going to go over some key terms, definitions, things of that nature. But before I start, we talked about pricing, but on average, since we're in Illinois, how much does a mobile home cost on average?
So the average price in Illinois, used mobile home, is right at $7,500. Mm-hmm. So if you're looking for something new, like if you're getting a brand new home, they can start it right at about like $35,000, $40,000.
All right. Okay. And one of the things, the negative connotations that go with mobile homes is that they're not safe. So one of the questions I had was like, how safe are mobile homes?
Man, I love that question. So so mobile homes are actually, since they're built in factories, they're wind tested. They're built to last, outstand tornadoes and earthquakes and things like that, right? The thing is, unfortunately, like you've seen maybe CNN or so, they may show a mobile home park with like three tops, you know what I'm saying,
right.
Gone. But it's not like, you know, back, I think, what's the movie? whatever it is. But anyway, with the houses flying all the way around and things like that, no, it's not like that. They actually built safe.
So what's the lifespan, right? So sometimes, like, you know, a traditional brownstone might be built in 1909. What's the lifespan of a mobile home?
Good question. So the older ones, anything that's built after 1990, up to 30 years. The new ones are built to last within 45 to 55 years.
Okay.
Okay. So as far as you was explaining that title, right, and it's different from, like, when you buy a home, like a regular home, and you have a deed. So can you explain that process as far as, like, the title? It's a lot. It's just, it's easy to do it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so as far as a mobile home, like, a mobile home is considered a motor vehicle, so it's kind of like a car. So when you are selling the asset, you're just going down to the DMV or whatever your motor vehicle department is in your state, and you're just transferring that title.
That's it?
Yeah.
How long does it take?
About 2 weeks to come back.
So the closing, what's a typical closing from buying a home and having it up and running? Like,
yeah, so buy, honestly, it's like a day. I mean, so you buying the home, you, of course, we're dealing with the park, so we're going to deal with the park manager. Our buyer has to sign some paperwork with the park. That's about 30 minutes to an hour. That's signing a lease for that lot rent that we talked about earlier. After that, we normally take our buyers. We go to the DMV together. We do that paperwork, transfer the title. That's about, again, a 15-minute process, and then they'll send the title back in the mail. That normally takes about 2 weeks, and then the new buyer will get the title. They'll own the asset now, and then we move on to the next deal.
That was good. Yeah, so one of the things when I was doing some research, it was like, there's a difference between modular homes and manufactured homes. What's the biggest difference?
So modular homes, more times you see concrete base where, so they have, like, they are more plotted on cement, right? Whereas a manufactured home is, They're literally sitting on cinder blocks. So that's what you see is called skirting. So you'll see, like, some vinyl that's, like, right around the bottom of that. So that's what covers that up. But the house is actually sitting on cinder blocks.
So, all right, what about insurance? Like, insurance for a mobile home, is it different from insurance for a regular home? Is it car insurance, since it's actually transportation vehicle? Like, how does that work?
Are we calling Geico? What are we doing? Hey, what are we calling?
Yeah, you literally can call Geico, though. Like, you're right. You literally can. So when it comes to mobile home insurance, it's very similar to what you would get for homeowners insurance or renters insurance. So you literally can call, like, Geico, State Farm, like your normal insurance companies, and just let them know, like, you would like to get insurance on your mobile home. And the typical cost for that is about, like, $14, $15 a month. So kind of similar to what you would pay for renters insurance.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what's the process? Because you said, like, the park owns the land, right? But you own the actual mobile home. What's the actual process to getting your mobile home into a park?
All right, so that process, you'll be really looking for a mobile home park owner who's looking for houses. And right now it's like a gold rush, right? Like, literally now out of the 44,000 mobile home parks, 4,000 are institutionally owned, meaning, like, just corporations that own it. But it's really like the Wild West because they see the opportunity. Cap rates are crazy on these things. So for them, what's happening is you have literally called, like, bird dog watchers. They're going to other people's parks, right, from another owner. So let's say Rashad has this park, right? Now he hires me to come in Troy's park to scout out some of Troy's houses to take back to his park.
They're like recruiting.
Right.
Man, trust me, bro.
So, like, what's some of the incentives that a park or a lot owner would say live in this lot as opposed to live in that lot?
So the one thing, the cool thing in the newer mobile home parks, what they're trying to really do is make it a community base. Because that's one thing about mobile home parks get a bad rap. It's a really good community because everybody knows each other, right? So, like, for example, it may be, you know, the amenities in the park. We got parks that got swimming pools and basketball courts. And
in the mobile home park?
In the park.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
In the park.
Yeah.
It's like a whole kind
of. Exactly.
Yeah. And so it's really just the amenities. Like, what can this park provide, right? Like one park, I love it because they give beautification awards for whoever has the best lawn, right? Some parks are pretty much like a concrete jungle or on concrete, but a lot of parks are, I mean, have, like, huge backyards, gated fences, and garages, and, like, you'll be surprised at seeing some of the way this stuff is developed.
So, all right. So you have a mobile home. You put it in the lot. But now the lot has a backyard and all that. So you have to pay for that backyard? Is that part of just the lot fee? Like, how does that work?
Yep, that's part of your lot fee. I equate it to almost like taxes, right? Because I know here in Chicago, depending on single family home, you may be paying anywhere from $3,000 to $6,000 on your taxes, right? I look at it, that's the same as taxes. If you add that number, if you're paying $375 a month, when you look at the yearly, it's pretty much still in line with taxes and some people pay in their cities.
So in real estate, you know, when people have multiple units and multiple assets, they have property managers. In the mobile home game, you have park managers.
Mm-hmm.
Is it similar, or what's the difference in those two roles?
So the park manager's role is really to oversee the park, for example, you know, make sure they fill in houses, you know, somebody's not paying their lot rent, make sure they send them their notices. A lot of parks have staff, so they have other handymen on the park. But the cool thing about it is they're not really most parks don't. They do rentals, but they're not, let's just say, like fixing everything in the house, should you say that.
Okay.
All right. So there's two types of communities, right? There's age-restricted and family communities.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Can you explain that?
Yeah, so all age community would be like, you know, 18 to really all ages. The restricted ones is a more, they're normally 55 and older, so it's more so retirement communities. And you normally see those like down south, Florida, West Coast, like Arizona, California, Las Vegas. Like you'll see the more restricted communities in those areas.
Okay, so how many people, like how many homes are in a typical community?
It varies. It could be anywhere from 30 upwards to 500 homes. It really just depends on that particular park.
And you said that the park manager doesn't come around to collect rent, right? So what's the process when somebody doesn't pay? Is it the eviction process? Are the deadlines the same as state regulated, or is it faster for mobile homes?
Honestly, from what we see, parks don't play no games, man. Like, I'm going to say this. Like, most parks that we deal with, they give you 10 days.
Okay.
You get a 10-day notice, and then after that, I mean, you can definitely pay, but if you're past that 30 days, they got paperwork already, and they're starting that eviction process.
Wow.
So, all right, what's the maintenance on mobile homes? Is it car maintenance? Is it house maintenance? Is it a combination of both? You have to change your oil? Like, what's the deal with that?
My timing belt broke.
Right.
So, I mean, literally, like regular house maintenance, right? Mm-hmm. The cool thing about a mobile home, all the materials are much cheaper than a traditional house, right, brick and mortar, because you're dealing with most houses come with, you know, vinyl floors. They're coming with, they say, wallboard instead of drywall. So most of your materials are cheaper. So, like, maintenance, like I tell people, if you're doing a full rehab on a mobile home, let's say a full gut, $12,000.
So speaking of that, you said fix up. So I took some notes. It's vinyl, it's rail rock, it's foam insulated, cinder block. So like, all right, you're fixing up and you're rebuilding a mobile home, right?
Mm-hmm.
How does that work? Like, you get a contractor to do that, and like how do you do that? Like, is it just like a regular home or?
So you can. Here's the thing: you can get a contractor, but there's a lot of mobile homes that use special contractors, right? They just do mobile homes because a lot of the maintenance a lot of times cheaper, and the materials are cheaper. If I take somebody who has been doing all single family houses rehab, he comes to my mobile home. Trust me, my price is gonna be a little bit higher because of what he's used to, right? but at the same time, we call him handyman. We got like a team of literally five guys, and when we need a rehab, we call them. They go ahead and do it, and the biggest thing for us, like, man, shout out to my guy, Packy Hood Estates, but just like we keep it clean, safe, and functional. That's our biggest thing. And we actually learned that model from him. Clean, safe, and functional. And that's our biggest thing. Like, we're not coming in there trying to do a bogus job because you have people. Mobile homes don't have inspections really like that.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. So it's really like, again, since it's a motor vehicle asset is not as strenuous as a house. Like,
there's no appraisal process.
Exactly.
No, not at all.
Exactly. And that's why for us, it's like, yo, we adding this value because we're not going to let nobody come in and tell us, like, no, wait, this is only worth $4,000. Like, no.
So as far as, like, getting started, right, how much money do you need to get started in the mobile home real estate industry?
I mean, really, we always tell our students, like, little to no money. It really just depends on your market and really just how you're prospecting. You can literally, like, for me and Byron, we don't really touch anything over $5,000. That's the strategy that we have created and stuck with. But even in like the higher markets, like we always say, like you can wholesale mobile homes. Like you can still literally go in and still, we call it like being that helper in a situation and helping a family to sell their home. And then again, you going in with no money down, you're just now just marketing the home and then taking the profit off that and then still making sure that they get the amount that they're looking for. So
how does the wholesaling, because I know anybody's not familiar with wholesaling real estate, it's like you're pretty much like the middleman. You never actually own the home, but you can make a profit. It's like if Troy wants to buy a home and you want to, if Troy wants to sell a home, you want to buy a home, and then I can come in and be like the middle person and then make like $10,000 to $15,000 and I don't really do any work. There's no risk. There's no money that I put up anything. Is it the same process for mobile homes?
Yes, exact same process. You know, you can put them on the contract, and the reality of it right now in this market is really no competition. That is why, like, we're in Illinois. We only, like, that we personally, we know of 10 other investors, but we've only met two. And and out of those, and the newer ones are our students.
Wow. So as you're talking, I'm thinking to myself, right, yeah, it's cool to get the mobile home, right? Mm-hmm. But you said that the person that owns the land is the one who makes the profit. How do I go about getting land? Do I have to buy a lot and then get licensing to have mobile homes on it? Like, what's that process?
So that's dope. So, for example, let's say we get a lot of people like, yo, I got like 30 acres down in Mississippi. Like, can I put homes on it? It's like, yes.
Okay.
Yes, you can. You know, like, honestly, if it's your land, the biggest thing is, let's say you just got raw land, right? So, yeah, now you're going to have to get septic and you're going to have to get the well system installed.
Okay.
On the high end, that can run you up to like $22,000. On the low end, you get all that installed. I hope you stay under 10. That'll be perfect. But let's say 12.5, right? Yeah. Now, moving the house, depending on where you're moving it from, a lot of moving companies start off right about that 1,000 range, as long as it's under 100 miles, depending on what it is. But let's say on a high end, your move is 5,000, right? Let's say you all in 30,000, right? Now you go get a house. You want to get a brand new house. Now you all in, let's say you got another 40,000, right? You're still under $100,000. So you're still under $100,000, right? And think about this. Now you can become the bank, right? You can either lease that land out forever, or you can just either package that up and now sell the land and the house.
Okay. So for buying it, do you buy it in an LLC, or you just buy it like as a regular person? Like how do you do that?
So when we started with buying it our personal, but now we purchase all our homes in LLC.
Why? Just from protection standpoint?
Yes, and then from there we go ahead and roll them in a trust.
Can you talk about that, the trust?
Yeah, and it's really just keeping your name off out. We don't want people to know how many assets we have. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we just learned from a mentor that, hey, this is just an extra layer of protection for us.
Smart business, man.
That's dope. You guys, I saw on your Instagram page, you said one property, you can get one property, I guess, like in the area, well, somewhere, I don't know where in America, but you can get one property for $45,000, and that could generate an income of $800 a month, let's say. Mm-hmm. Well, you can get 9 mobile homes for $45,000, and that generates an income of $2,700 a month.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Profit margins.
Yeah. So I actually made that post.
First lady
in mobile homes. But I definitely did that just to kind of show the margins as far as, you know, when we say like mobile homes is the highest cash on cash return on any form of real estate. So in that specific example, I kind of used the numbers that I got from one of my realtor friends who ended up purchasing a property for $45,000. In that situation, she was a landlord. They were renting it out for $8,000. So in that case, again, we always look at long term, the 60-month terms, because we normally put our tenant buyers on seller finance for 60 months. So in that case, if she's making in 5 years, she made a little bit over $45,000, so kind of close to like $48,000 mark. So she made her money back. But I took that same number and I was like, look, let me compare that $45,000 to what you can do in the mobile home game. So with $45,000 in a mobile home game, again, if you're sticking at that $5,000 range that myself and Byron stick to,
nine houses
for $45,000, right? Remember, we talked a little bit about earlier about that seller finance, putting our tenant buyers on payments. Now, if you're putting them on payments for a minimum of $300 a month, mind you, we're no landlords in this situation. So we have no landlord responsibility. We're playing the bank. So in that $300 a month for 9 homes, you're looking at $2,700 a month, again, in cash flow. So you already tripling your cash flow profit. So now let's look at 5 years. How much you looking to make in 5 years? Over, it's like over $160,000. I can't remember. I think it's $162,000. So you tripled your initial investment investing in mobile homes. So then it's like when people always ask us, like, why do y'all stick to mobile homes? That's why.
Byron? Good job, man. She knows our numbers.
Yeah, that was impressive. Whoa. That was impressive. So, yeah, in the next segment, we're going to talk about education, and we're going to talk about scaling and a few other things in the last one. All right, so in the last segment, we're going to talk about education, scaling. But before I start, I just had a quick question. So, all right, there's different ways how, in like traditional real estate, right? You like buy and hold and make money off of cash flow, or you can, you know, flip properties, right? So I know right now your main focus is flipping, but is there profit in buying and holding and getting like cash flow from mobile homes as well?
Oh man, definitely. For example, I got to give a shout out to one of our students, Harold, but he's down in Georgia, and he purchased a mobile home for $1,500, put $1,000 into it, and what he did was he saw opportunity with truckers. He didn't understand a lot of guys stay extended stays, so he rented out per room $500 per room of his mobile home. Right? Okay. So think about it. He got his money back in like 3 months. Mm. Now he's making all profit. He just created $1,000 cash flow. Well, I'll say this. I think his lot rent's like $375. Mm-hmm. No, right around that range. But at the same time, he's still bringing in close, you know, over $600 a month just cash flow.
So the lot fee plus the whatever your charge for rent, that's what gives you the total rent price.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Okay. Yep.
So what's your vision to scale? Like what's your plans on scaling? For your personal business brand.
And so we definitely want mobile home parks. Mm-hmm. So the larger goal with that is to get an acquisition where we find somebody who has a portfolio, 10, 20 mobile home parks that's looking kind of just to retire, right? And just pretty much purchase that portfolio and just build from there and really open up the floodgates for more people to invest in mobile homes.
Is that just something like just being in the industry you'll know, or is there like a database where you can see like these people own this amount of mobile parks?
Right. So we've been doing our homework. We got the top 100 companies that do it. Literally, to be in the top 100, if you own over 15 mobile home parks, you are in the top 100 of the companies.
How much does it cost for a mobile home park?
So now the prices went up. I would say on the average for 50 pads plus, you're looking at about like 1.2, depending on the region, 1.2 mil, 2 million. Really depends on the region, right? I've seen parks that has 100 pads that was going for 1.2 mil.
Pad is just the area that's designated for the...
Exactly.
How much revenue can that bring in on a year?
Wow. So, man, that's a great question. So, for example, I look at it, let's say you have 200 pads, right? And then you're getting $400 per pad. Normally, for a park to be fully occupied, you're looking at... A good park, 95%, right? 95% of those houses are filled. So if you look at your cash flow, I might pull out the calculator real quick. Troy, I heard you dope with numbers, man.
I'll run them in my head.
I'm trying to think. But the cash flow, I know I had some parks that pretty much, but they're like netting per month in the in six-figure range. And just net after everything. Mm. Literally a lot of
after a year, you could probably get your million back.
Oh yeah.
And then $100,000, let's say on the low end, $100,000 a month, you'd be making from that.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And with like maintenance, you gotta have like maintenance, upkeep, and all that stuff.
Maintenance guys, if you have a park manager, that comes with your costs. Mm-hmm. Of course, taxes, right? But a lot of times, the thing what I've learned about in the mobile home park, if you give the tenants more responsibility, so they're responsible for water, they're responsible. That's how you cut costs, really.
Also, like the utilities up to them.
Yes.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
So you guys are teaching people how to get into the industry as well, right? How are you doing that?
So, man, we got several products. We got an e-book. We have an e-course. We do group coaching. We do a free live webinar every Wednesday just to kind of get people acclimated, because that's the biggest thing. Like, we look at it like we wish somebody would have showed us this years ago. Mm-hmm. And then we see the opportunity, and it's low competition. Like, literally, I don't care if it's 10,000 people that started tomorrow. It's not going to be saturated.
Right, so y'all are selling people the mistakes that y'all made.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So being that y'all in this industry and it was new to y'all, what are some of the mistakes that you made during your first deal?
Well, I would say one mistake we made being new investors, we was at a park, and the park managers, they had just bought the park as well, so it was new for them too, and they were showing us a house. and, you know, just talking, we actually made the mistake. Well, it actually wasn't we, it was Byron.
Excuse me, I'm take my accountability.
Right. Stick to it. But no, he made the mistake of letting them know how much capital we had, right? So he ended up telling them, like, oh, yeah, we got about 10,000.
Oh, that's
so,
on him. That's on him.
Right. Yeah. So, so, of course, you know, they tried to, well, we say finesse us. They tried to finesse us out of a deal and pretty much was showing us a home that we knew was only worth about maybe a couple of thousand, but he was trying to sell it to us for about, I think, 4 to 5, and then saying, like, we would still have to put another 5 into it for rehab, pretty much taking up all of our capital for our first deal. So we quickly learned, like, yeah, you got to hush your mouth when you're going out to invest, and, you know, some other mistakes. I know you can bring up some.
Man, not winterizing the house in the winter.
Yeah.
Like, those pipes, since they're above ground, man, that was – and it's not bad. Like, honestly, literally the first time I tried to go a cheap route, so I hired a guy, told him he could do it for $250. I'm like, $250 for plumbing? Yeah, let's go.
Right.
And he just I paid for it, and then I had to pay another $5. Again, $750 for plumbing, right? Like, where they do that at?
So, what about lack of market research? I thought that was one of the mistakes that a person could make, right, as far as, like, not knowing the market well enough?
We get so many DMs of people that just maybe jump on a webinar and I get it because it is exciting, right? Mm-hmm. But you still, it's terms and it's not a lot, right? But if you kind of jump in there and not really knowing, it can cost you more money because most people hear like, man, I can just start with 5,000 and then they'll take that 5,000 and it's just like, okay, well, what about, we always tell you to budget for lot rent, right? That's part of your expense. Mm-hmm. If we tell you to negotiate lot rent, sometimes park managers may say, hey, you know what? Like, let us rehab this. We'll give you a month or two free. But if you're not, you still got to incorporate that into your cost. It can take you on a long end 6 months to sell your house, right? So you got to just incorporate just the little cost that can add up.
On the rental side, when you're getting people to rent, what's the turnover? Are people signing 6-month lease? Or, like you said, some of the truckers do maybe a month lease. What's the turnover?
So, honestly, most people we realize that they're willing to stay at 5 years max in mobile home parks because you got to think about it. It's just like I look at it like this. It's just like the hood, right? It's certain parts of the hood that's just a gutter that people know they want to make it out to, and then they move to another part of the hood that's a little bit better, but they still want to move out. So it's levels to it, right? Unless you're just in a mobile home park in Miami off the water, you probably not. You know what I mean? Like you want to stay there for 10 years plus, right? But you know, so honestly, for us, we provide anywhere from 2 upwards to 10 years, but normally most of our average is like 3 to 5 years. But the turnover, we rarely get people that want to leave unless they're family. Like, for example, we had a family that a couple, they were expecting their third child. So, you know, they need more space now. So in that case, but normally they're going to stay.
So I saw on your page also you said that people's mistake is buying high and selling low, right? So, like, all right, how do you, like, well, how does that happen in the mobile home world?
Yeah. So I'm going to say this. Profit is profit. I'm not going to say we teach you how to be greedy, right? But we teach you how to make large returns. For example, if I buy a house for $10,000 and with our system, you turn around, you only make $2,000 off or you make $12,000, I'm happy for you that you made money, but it's just like you know you left way more money on the table. So that's the way we look at it, especially if you look at it long term, right? Like if – when you do sell a finance, again, if you take a minimum of $300 for 60 months, that's $18,000.
So what got you into education? Like what made you want to spread awareness and teach people how to actually do this?
Man, be honest, for myself, like that was already my calling. I've been doing a lot of mentoring. I've already doing a lot of coaching. And honestly, God's high, I never would have saw myself. If God would have shown me the picture like, yo, yeah, next year you about to be doing these mobile homes. I'm like, bro, right. But it's just he had a bigger picture for us, and I mean both of us, and man, it was just like dope to even see Sharnice just like, yeah, let's go, right?
Yeah, like I told him, like once we did our first couple of deals, I think we stayed like right here, and I told him like we gotta show this, we gotta teach this to our people because there's so many. I know so many other investors who have been trying to wholesale, who've been trying to get into traditional real estate, but again, it's certain factors that have been stopping them, like credit, capital, they can't get started. So once I found this, I was like, come on, like this is bigger than us, like this for the people.
So I noticed you have students, so obviously they go through the webinar, are you guys coaching them after as well and bringing them to their first deals?
Yeah, so we always say anybody who invests in the program, like, you family. Like, hit us up. Like, we don't want to we're not that type of, like, okay, buy a program and then go out there on your own and do it. Mm-hmm. Right? If you don't hit us up, that's on you, you know what I mean? But we really, it's like an open book, because that's the thing. It's just, like, the more success that they have, like, that's just, I mean, that's joy for us, but it's just, like, what we doing is just we help them create wealth for them.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's dope. That's dope. So, all right. Well, thank you. We appreciate it.
Oh, man.
This has been extremely educational. So, all right, what's the information for your courses? How can people contact you? How can they check out all of your programs that you have going?
Yeah, so for one, man, Instagram is really our main page. Follow us at Mobile Home Elite Investors. There you can literally click the link in the bio. That can get you can get access to the course. We have a private Facebook group, an ebook. You even need a payment plan. That's what we have. Private coaching, whatever you really need. That's what we get our program to help everybody. We got something for everybody.
Dope. Troy.
Yeah, shout out to everybody on Patreon.com. That's our proud to pay program. Everybody that's been supporting on there. There's 5 tiers. You can join any tier that you like. There's bonus footage there. There's bonus content. I just want to give a quick shout out to our new members, Jada and Marquise, and Christian and Derek as well. They've joined, and some of them have joined the Tier 5, some joined the Tier 2. Anything that you provide is a blessing to us, because it allows us to come here, come to Chicago, go to other cities, and highlight some hometown heroes. And so this is great. And we learn every time that we do an episode, we learn something new. So thank you to everybody on Patreon. Thank you to everybody on earningleisure.com that's purchased the merch. I think it's the first episode that everybody had the merch on.
Yeah, for sure.
So shout out to everybody that's been purchasing the merch. We got our tour shirts up there as well, so feel free to get that.
Assets over liabilities, that's what we're running with. So shout out to Chicago. The good city of Chicago has been very hospitable to us. And this is actually the first one of our Hometown Heroes. We're actually going to be releasing another episode with the Downing Brothers. They are Chicago celebrities. they got an HGTV show, and they're interesting because they're actually firefighters, but they're also real estate investors as well, and they're also television stars as well. So they have an interesting story, and as Troy said, the merch. But don't forget our workshop series as well. Our workshop is 10/17, and that's going to be financing for first-time real estate investors, how to finance your first real estate deal. That's going to be in person in Brooklyn, but it's also going to be live streamed for anybody. You can go to the events tab on our website, earnyourleisure.com, to check that out. And also, as you guys know, I'm a financial advisor. So if you want to hit me up for a 30-minute consultation, anything from retirement planning, estate planning, life insurance, investing, anything like that, my calendar is also on earnyourleisure.com. And as I said, that is a 30. It's not to pick my brain. Please do not just call me for unrelated random questions. I'm being very generous with my time here. So it's specifically targeted for people that are interested in getting help in those areas. But yes, that is on earnyourleisure.com. And the book tip of the week is a step-by-step guide to buy and sell mobile homes. You know who wrote that book? Yeah, our guy Byron wrote that book. It's actually his last name is Sellers, which is actually very interesting.
Very fitting.
When he told me, I'm like, is that like a stage name? Like, it's like selling homes and his last name is Sellers. So God's plan, for sure. So, yes, check that. And that's the ebook, right?
Yes, sir.
Yes. So make sure you check them out. This is a very, very good episode for us. And blessings to you. It's extremely encouraging to see any young entrepreneurs, but especially a couple that, you know, had start. It's not always all good times either, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you start, you know, and it's issues when you first start. But to see you guys, you know, progressing, and I'm interested to see next year, 5 years, 10 years. So I'll be following your journey. I'll be rooting for you guys for sure.
Oh, man.
For
appreciate
sure.
Thanks for walking us to your home.
Oh, yeah.
Right. People look at the back and they're like, yo, I like the new setup.
Right.
We're kind of on the road, guys.
Right.
Yes. So, yes, we will see you guys. And peace.
Peace.
Looking for a day. They're looking for a day, Bill. any good to you. You know what? I love to get down, Jack.
Yeah.
And when I get down, you understand, I don't have to go into no funny bag. Say, all right, come on, I'll do this. I mean, say what I want, man. I can't, you understand? That's the way I feel. You know, I believe I get down right about here.
Right on.
But if I get down, you know, Bud got out of sight too, coming up. We got a record Bud right here, you know.
Yeah.
So we're trying to get our thing out of the way before Bud get into it. Bud, come here, get on before we...
Yeah.
Is it all right?
Yeah.
Bud, do you think it's going to be a hit, Bud, you cut?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You think it's going to be a hit? Yeah. Well, I know it's a smash. Because you're in the thing, man. You're the same way as that, you know. It's got to be a hit.
Hey, don't be so mean.
You know I'm clean now.